Good evening, Manchester! I think we could do a bit better than that. Good evening, Manchester! Woo! Welcome, you are very welcome to the People Histories Museum here for our Green Workers' Charter launch. Woo! And folks online, you're very welcome. Good to see you as well. Before we start, a couple of little bits of housekeeping. You know how it is. If there is a fire evacuation at all, we just listen to the instructions of the museum staff. Fire exits are over to the right, but they will direct us if we need to go. There are a couple of spare seats at the front. If people do want to sit down, you are more than welcome to do that. We've also got a quieter room upstairs or via the lift, kind of where it says International Workers Day. Our lovely, lovely little artwork on the wall there, just on that balcony level. There's a little bit for you there as well. But most importantly, and I'm sure you've already done this anyway, you might have noticed there are QR codes on the wall all around. And I want you all to give them a little scan, because I want you all to be signing the Green Workers' Charter. Can you do that for me? Yes? I think we can. We can. Fantastic. You are in for an absolute treat this evening. We've got fantastic guest speakers from the Green Party, our inner sanctum of Greens, if you like. And we've also got some wonderful workers who are coming to speak to us this evening. But I just want to make sure that you are all definitely sort of ready and riled up to go. So I'd be intrigued to know. Give me a whoop, a cheer or a jazz hands if you're in Unite the Union. Not bad, not bad. That's pretty, pretty loud. Why don't we try again for, I don't know, say Unison. That's most of our speakers by the sounds of it, so that was good. Who else we go for? The NEU, National Education Union. Hey, and I'm really going to sort of try one here. Anyone from Equity? It's just me and Jasser. Come on, Equity. We're loud though, so we're fine. It always works. Anyway, I'm Paul Valentine. I'm one half of the trade union liaison officer on the Green Party executive. So I've been helping sort of organise this today along with the Green Party trade union group, who you're going to meet the chair of a little bit later on. But really, to get us started, to understand what our Green Workers' Charter is, I'm going to introduce you to my other half trade union liaison officer, Kate Jones.
Everyone. Oh, is it working? Amazing. Okay, I want to start by saying a massive welcome to everyone who's been able to make it here tonight. To every Green, every trade unionist, and every worker who's come here because they believe, as I do, that something has to change. Today is May Day. As International Workers' Day, it's over a century old, and it has always belonged not to any one party or organization, but to workers everywhere. To everyone who understands that workers only win when we stand together. We are standing today in the People's History Museum, an institution that exists to celebrate those struggles, sacrifices, and solidarity. There is no time and no place more fitting to launch what I'm here to introduce, and which you may have already seen in the news today, the Green Workers' Charter. The Workers' Charter is not a new idea for the Green Party. These are our long-standing policies, reiterated and reaffirmed, and finally given the space and the energy they deserve by the Green Movement. Fundamentally, it's a set of principles and pledges which collectively say that as a party, we must challenge the concentration of power and wealth that have held workers back for decades. We must fight for structural change that enables workers' rights to be continually strengthened and enshrined. And we must do this by championing policies that give workers power. I've been a Green all my adult life, and I am older than I look, because this is a party that walks the walk on justice. And that's environmental justice, social justice, and economic justice. Those aren't separate commitments. They're the same commitment to equity and fairness, expressed in different parts of our politics. And the Green Party is and must always be a home for workers. And we will not trade their interests or well-being for political calculation or electoral convenience. We are proud to be different in that. And that's why we're standing here tonight with our Workers' Charter, built on three core principles. First, higher pay. Because poverty wages in one of the wealthiest countries on earth are a moral failure. And a £15 minimum wage for every worker, regardless of age, is not an ambitious demand. It's a basic one. And raising pay for everyone, because higher wages are good for everyone. A more equal economy is a better economy, for workers and for society as a whole. Second, strong rights, because every worker deserves dignity and real protection at work, with the power to challenge employers who break the rules. We're fighting for a robust single worker status, a better work-life balance, and meaningful government action to protect workers from AI harms and ensure they share in technology's benefits. And lastly, collective power. Because history shows that organized labor is how we achieve change. It's how we end exploitation. It's how we redistribute wealth. It's how we redistribute power. At the end of the day, unions matter, and we're going to fight for them. Scrap the anti-union laws and give workers the full legal right to organize, strike, picket, and act in solidarity. Together, these are our campaigning pledges for 2026. And this charter carries the signatures of our MPs, our members of the Lords, our leadership. From the ground up to the very top, this is the Green Party saying, we're a party of workers. We are on your side, and we're fighting for this now. And it's not just a statement to the Green Party and its members. It's a statement to the whole Labour movement. This is the Green Party saying, we're serious. We're here, and we want to build something new together. And that statement doesn't belong to Parliament or to party structures. This charter belongs to everyone who believes that workers deserve better, and that means everyone here tonight. Sign it online. There are QR codes all around the room and some lovely big things to sign at the back. Take it with you and fight for it. Because the only way any of this will happen is if all of us, Greens and non-Greens alike, commit to fighting for it together. I am so proud to be here today talking to you all and introducing the Green Workers' Charter. What we're seeing today is a party growing into its own convictions, making explicit what has always been true, and committing today in public to fight for it. You're going to hear from lots of people who believe in the Charter and its pledges too, from our MPs who are taking these pledges into Parliament, from the leadership who's making this party into what I always believed it could be, and above all, from workers who are fighting every day in their workplaces, in their communities, in their unions, and in solidarity with one another for a better, fairer, and more equal society. I can't wait, and I won't hold you up any longer. I hope you have a brilliant evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Kate. Okay, so we are now going to hear from those workers, but I don't want to introduce them. I need some help to introduce them. So we're going to be talking, start off with the pay section of the charter, and I'm going to ask the Green Party leader, Mr. Zach Polanski, to the stage.
Thank you very much. Manchester, how are you doing? And before I begin, I do just want to recognise the huge amount of work that so many people have put into this Workers' Charter, but particularly the work of Paul and Kate of the Green Party Trade Union. So give it up for Paul and Kate. Now, I want to introduce the higher pay section. Just before I do, though, I want to zoom out for a moment. Because as a Mancunian speaking right now in the People's History Museum, I recognise the role that workers have played in this country. Most obviously to work, but frankly to the very fabric of this country. In fighting and standing against fascism, against hate, against racism, and against the division in our communities. Workers who have come together in Manchester, but right across the country through history, from Cable Street to many, many instances where people have risen and stayed together. And the reason why this feels poignant right now is yesterday I was in Hastings, where I was at a Green Party rally, and I was heckled by people doing Nazi salutes. And the only solution to that, the antidote to that, is right here in this room. It's for Workers' Charter. It's workers, whether they're in Manchester, London, Birmingham, Wales, all the towns and villages in between, right across our country, who say the only authentic response to stand against racism and to stand against fascism is solidarity. And so, higher pay. Why do we need it? Well, first of all, we hear this constant refrain that there's no money left in this country. But the 50 wealthiest families own more wealth than the bottom 50% of the population. That's 50 families owning more wealth than 34 million people. And of course, small businesses, even medium-sized businesses, are a huge part of a thriving economy. And it's really important that we pay our workers properly. So nothing in this charter is the end of the story. This goes alongside a whole range of policies to make sure we're taking a holistic approach to making sure we're supporting our workers. And that starts with a minimum wage of £15. And the reason why that is so important is because that shouldn't stop or start at a certain age. Whatever age you are, if you are doing the same job, you deserve the same wage. Then we need to talk about public sector pay. We know the people who keep this country moving, our teachers, our cleaners, our nurses, so many people working in these public sector jobs. And so often when they cut a deal, the deal is often still a real-term pay cut. This is totally unacceptable. We're going to get later on into the charter about how we strengthen union ties, how we strengthen our responsibilities towards each other. But at a minimum in this higher pay, pay must be linked as a minimum to inflation. No public sector worker should face pay cuts. And then finally, we have pay justice. So we've been floating and talking about the idea of a 10-to-1 pay ratio. And what I always find interesting is the person who says, oh, you'll have to bring down the CEO's wage. Why do we have to bring down the CEO's wage? Why don't we pay people more? If a business is doing that well, let's make sure every single business that is flourishing is paying its workers properly. And so it's my pleasure to welcome to the stage two workers themselves who are going to speak more in detail about this. We have Oliver Probert-Hill, who is working in hospitality, and we've got Sammy Meir, who is a teacher. Welcome, Ollie and Sammy.
Hi, I'm Ollie. I'm a hospitality member, Hospitality Unite member, based in South Manchester. I work in a bar in Wythenshawe. As a worker who's on a zero-hour contract, I know how important trade unions are. Recently, we've seen the growth of hospitality workers organising for better pay, terms and conditions. We've seen wins at the Village Hotel in Glasgow, Eton Park Cafe in Norwich, and the Glasgow Film Theatre. I'd like to talk about the Glasgow Film Theatre especially, because I think the work that they've done is so amazing and so crucial. The Film Theatre in Glasgow is one of the only hospitality venues in the whole country to have achieved a trade union recognition agreement, and that's down to the workers, to especially the young workers who've done that themselves. There's also something that's happened really recently, and I think it's really crucial for politics more broadly. The Film Theatre has agreed to stop serving Coke, thanks to Coca-Cola's ongoing support of Israel and the genocide in Gaza. Workers across the world are organising against Israel, and hospitality workers are no different. From Glasgow to Italy, workers are standing against Israel and their treatment of the Palestinian people. I couldn't come here and talk about workers organising and not talk about the Kimpton Hotel. In Manchester, Unite members in my branch are organising for better pay, terms and conditions. Unfortunately, their employer has acted appallingly. They've sacked two of our reps and heavily reduced the hours of another. These are classic examples of union busing tactics. So I'd like to send a message of solidarity to the Unite members at Kimpton Clocktown Hotel. Thanks to the current job market, many young people like myself are working hospitality longer than they previously would have thought they would. This is why it's so crucial that hospitality workers organise. I think a key example of where pay has increased is if you look at the Stand Comedy Club. They have venues in Newcastle, Edinburgh, and yes, Glasgow. They've won 3 years of inflation-busting pay rises, and recently they won a further 3% increase on top of the further 20% negotiated previously. Yes, it's important the age bracket of the minimum wage is scrapped, and the minimum wage needs to go up as well. But it's crucial that workers come together to organise and fight back against bad bosses. We've seen that hospitality workers can win when they organise and unite. That's why it's amazing to see that the Green Party is backing workers and is abolishing all anti-trade union laws. I joined the Green Party in January after a lot of pressure from my friend Beth to campaign against fascism and to campaign for a Green MP in Manchester, and I'm proud that this party backs workers. Thank you for listening to me for what I have to say. As many of you know, it's May Day, and in Manchester we have our own celebrations this Sunday on the 3rd. The local Green Party has a block on the May Day march. If you're interested in joining us, you can speak to me, Phoebe, Max, or Beth. We'll be at the stall. You'll be able to see the Manchester Green Party sign and join our group chat, and it'll be a fun day. Thank you for listening to me.
Right, I'm Sami Mehr, and I'm a secondary school teacher, so I'm going to tell you a bit about what's happening in the teaching sector, because many people have many conceptions about teachers. They think they will enjoy luxurious life. So I joined the teaching profession in 1991, so that's 35 years ago, and I've seen some really good times in teaching, but unfortunately there are bad times in teaching as well. So at the moment, we're going through a really, really bad period. Now, according to the Institute of Fiscal Studies, teachers' pay has experienced significant real-time erosion since 2010. So at the moment, most of the experienced teachers like myself were paid something like 13% less compared to what were paid, say, 15 years ago. In the same way, those teachers who teach in colleges, their real pay is cut up to 18%, right? But that's just a part of the story. The bigger part is next. Now, when you go to a supermarket, maybe you want to go to Asda and you want to buy some a punnet of grapes, you see a punnet of grapes and you'll say, hang on, that's 149. That's cheap because it was 149 about 2 years ago. But you don't realize that the same punnet of grapes was 500 grams 2 years ago, now it's only 350 grams. So same thing is happening with the teachers' pay as well. So yes, our pay has been given a few pay increases as well, but we're doing way more work than before. The reason is this, that when they give a pay rise, and you might have seen they've just given a pay rise to teachers, they are unfunded pay rise. So schools have to get money from somewhere to give that increased wage. That means that they sack quite a few of our staff, particularly those people who are on support staff, which means that most of the teachers have to do something like twice as much work as before. So where we used to have only 25 children in a classroom, we have more than 32 children in just one classroom. That means we have to do extra marking, we have to do loads of work. And not only that, since COVID, since this pandemic came, there's a massive number of increase in pupils with their mental health issues and learning difficulties. And in old days, say 15 years ago, when we have specialists who are helping us, they're not there anymore. So we're stuck with a group of children who are perfect children, really nice children, on their own. But when they're sitting in a small classroom with something like 32 of them, they have behavior issues. And that's why most of the teachers, they're actually crowd-controlling that place instead of teaching. Because of that, many teachers, they're leaving the profession, which means that they're getting people, supply staff, who don't know children really well. Now, teaching, like any other profession, based on good relationships. So if you just come for one day, teach for a few hours, and then go away, you won't be able to make good relationship with children. That means that experienced teachers like myself, when they will have the same class, say, in next lesson, these children won't be behaving they're supposed to be behaving. That's why we have seen a massive increase in behavioral problem as well. So if you look at the amount of work we have to do, many people think, hang on, you teachers, you get 13 weeks off a year, but you don't realize that in those 13 weeks we're actually working. I'm working every weekend because if I have a class of 32 children and I have 5 classes, you can imagine the amount of marking I have to do, the reports I have to write, all sort of others, just silly documentation I have to prepare. And it's getting worse each and every year. And it's because of that that you can see that there's so many teachers who are leaving the teaching profession. And that's going to have a massive impact for everyone, not just for teachers, because we are the one who built the next generation. That's why it's really important that when we're doing work, think of us teachers as workers and realize that we're struggling, and if something happens with us, if something happens with the teaching profession, it's going to have a massive impact for the whole society, which you can actually see happening, because we've seen those children whom we taught, say, about 15 years ago, they have become parents, and that means that they won't be able to teach their own children as well further down the line. So I won't take more time. I'm just going to finish by saying that teaching is one of the most important professions in society. And if we want the best future for our children, that means for our whole generation, we must value, support, and properly invest in our schools and our teachers. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sammy, Ollie, and Zach there. Thank you very much, guys. So our next section of the charter is on strong workers' rights. So I feel like our next speaker needs to be someone who's pretty strong. And the next speaker, I feel like, is so strong that she could possibly beat both Labour and Reform in a Galton and Denton by-election. Folks, it's Hannah Spencer.
Thank you so much, everybody, and thank you for that wonderful introduction. Thank you, everyone, for being here tonight. It is so good to see everyone, and I'm so honoured to be introducing the workers' rights section of the Green Workers' Charter, the strong rights that we all need, because this part is so, so simple. It is about what we deserve from work. And as I said on the night that I accepted the honour of becoming the MP for Gorton and Denton, working used to get you somewhere. It got you a holiday, maybe a car, maybe nice stuff for your kids at Christmas, maybe nice stuff for your greyhounds, or whoever you want to spend your money on. But now, working hard, what does it really get you? Too many people in this country are working their arses off and barely surviving. And I know that our Green Workers' Charter is the way that we can fix this. So let's talk about worker equality, because I think we really do see two-tier workplaces. People doing the same job, but being treated differently. Same job, different pay. Same job, different rights. Same job, different security. And where is that change that we were all promised? Because all I'm seeing is outsourcing, forced and bogus self-employment, casualisation of work. And this has not happened by accident. It has been done to us. And it's not been done to improve our lives, has it? It has been done to help the super rich get even richer off the back of our hard work. And the fear that people have in their workplaces of challenging this is real. Because when people cannot pay their spiralling rent, can't afford the eye-watering price rises for the food that they need to eat, can't meet the water bill when it's hiked up again, kicking off at work is the last thing that people can often do. But we shouldn't need to kick off, because people in this country in 2024 elected a government who promised to improve their lives. What has happened? So let's talk about work-life balance, because over half of workers say that work is getting more intense. More people are finishing their days absolutely shattered. And one of the clearest ways to change that is the right to switch off. And this was promised and then dropped. And other countries have it, and yet we don't. because we don't belong to our bosses. We should not have to give every minute of our lives to work. The rules that we're working under were written over 25 years ago, before emails, in a phone, in your pocket, before work and life and home life became stuck together. They don't reflect reality anymore. And neither does our parental leave system. Dads matter. The dads that I worked alongside as plumbers, electricians, scaffolders, all the dads doing any job deserve proper parental rights. One in five dads take no leave at all, and not because they don't want to, but because they can't afford it. The statutory rate is nowhere near enough to live on. Because if we're actually serious about equality, we need to show it at home, for new parents, everywhere. And finally, AI justice, the conversation that everyone else is avoiding, but we in the Green Party are actually taking on. This government is pushing full speed ahead on AI. There are all these plans for AI. There are public contracts with companies like OpenAI and Palantir. Huge amounts of public money, our money, going into this space. But where is the protection for workers? Where's the promised AI bill? 2 years into this government and silence on it, and that is a failure. And workers don't get to pause whilst government catches up. AI is here. It is already in our workplaces right now. And without proper protections, people are being left exposed and vulnerable. And nobody should lose their job or see their wages cut or have their conditions worsened, all while someone else profits. Creative workers are already seeing their labour scraped and reused without their consent. And trade unions, they should be at the table every single time AI is introduced into a workplace. Because workers shouldn't have change imposed on us. Workers should shape it. And if there are benefits from AI, then workers should feel them. Higher wages, more time off, a four-day week, yes. Because without this, without us feeling the benefits, it's just the same old story of the profits being hoarded by the same old people. Everything funneling to the top whilst everyone else struggles. Technology should improve our lives, and if it doesn't, then it shouldn't be introduced, full stop. So what we're saying tonight is that workers deserve what isn't being delivered, and this is what the Greens are fighting for, because work should give you a nice life, not take that nice life away. And just under 2 years ago, Labour promised to transform and improve working life. They got elected under a banner of change, but that change to workers is too slow and it has been watered down. And why should we be grateful for crumbs when Labour promised us the full loaf? And I say that as someone who is realising that the decisions, how they get made and where they get made, that two-tier workplace is in full steam. Because can any of us imagine going to work after a few drinks and making big decisions about everyone else? No. And yet that is what is happening. The people who make the decisions, some of them are doing it after a few drinks. And to tell us that they care about us, absolute nonsense. And we have the power to change that, to get people like us from the jobs that we do into the places where decisions are being made. Because we deserve more, and our Green Workers Charter will actually deliver it. I'm so proud to introduce to the stage Shireen Asau, Education Officer for United Tech and Allied Workers, part of the Communication Workers Union. Sarissa Guo, University Worker, a member of Public Service Unison. And Jasser Aluwaya, actor, member of Actors Union Equity. Please come to the stage and join me. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, everybody.
Hello, everyone. My name is Shireen. Hi. I am one of your Green Party candidates for Ladywell in Lewisham. And... thank you. And the chair of the Lewisham Palestine Solidarity Campaign. But today, I am here as a trade unionist and as the education officer for the UK's first union for tech workers, United Tech and Allied Workers. So I wanted to start this off kind of in a dark place. I'm really sorry, but I wanted to take you back to like 2021. I was on furlough. I was about to be made redundant. And like so many other people, I was really questioning the purpose of my life. I come from a very devout Catholic family. My grandma came here in the 1960s and she devoted herself to service, service in the church, service in the NHS as a nurse, and service to her community. And I was really thinking, like, I want to do something equally as good and as meaningful and as impactful as she did. So I started working in a bank. But bear with me, because it wasn't just any bank. This was a fintech, and it was going to change the banking world. It was going to make it fairer. And to be very fair to my former employer, I did see changes while I worked there. I saw the starting salary change. So workers who started after me were earning more than me for the same role as me with less responsibilities. I saw the culture change from a friendly culture to one of high stress. I saw the perks and benefits decreasing and the monitoring and surveillance increasing. And I thought, wow, workers deserve better. And with the support of United Tech and Allied Workers, I started to organize. And we organized quickly. Within 1 month, we had 80 members. After 2 months, we had 200 members. After 6 months, we had almost 500 members. So many members. I was stressed. I did not know what to do with that many members. And now I'm going to take you on a slight detour. I'm very sorry. Has anyone here seen BoJack Horseman? Yeah, I love that show. It's so funny and also very depressing. So it has really amazing one-liners. And one line that has really stuck with me throughout all of time is this one line where it goes like, fool me once, shame on you. But teach a man to fool me, and I will be fooled for the rest of my life. And the enemies of our progress, they have been teaching, and we have been fooled. We have been told for years and years that unions do not matter. We have been told that union membership is an unnecessary cost. We've been fooled into thinking that we are on our own, and we have been fooled into thinking that nothing can change. And at the same time, private companies and billionaires have been organizing. They've been spending millions lobbying our politicians to get the changes that they want. What do you think happens when workers organize? What do you think happens if we stand together and try and get the changes that we want? At United Tech and Allied Workers, we know what happens. We supported workers at a company called Mighty who wanted to unionize. Within 9 months, that company had reached recognition. Big up to Ellie, one of our organizers, and also big up to Mighty. It's really not easy for a company to give over any power, put so much faith in their workers, but they did. And in January this year, the unionized workers at Mighty voted to give themselves a 22.5% pay rise, which equaled about £8,000 per unionized member at that company. So, yeah. But we already know that unionized workers make more money. So what if we push things further? What if we organize to make our workplace greener? What if we organize to divest from arms companies? What if we organize to stop building harmful technologies? Well, at UTAR, United Technologied Workers, we also know. So remember that bank that I was talking about earlier? The workers there, during the genocide in Gaza, lobbied the company to change their policies to allow in-app donations, charitable donations, direct to Gaza. And they won. In the same company, they lobbied their employer to move pensions away from AXA, which was in the BDS boycott list. And they won. And that wasn't me as an organizer. I wasn't even in the country for half of that stuff. That was not me. So, that was the workers working together. And at United Tech and Allied Workers, at the moment, we're supporting workers at Google who are organizing against Google's involvement in Project Nimbus. Project Nimbus is building the infrastructure which is needed to do war crimes, to do surveillance, to do this genocide. Some of these workers at Google are making big money, like big money, not even like, I wish I was making that much. But the amount of money that they're making is not worth their values as people. That is true worker power. But it doesn't always go like that. So at United Tech and Allied Workers, we have been supporting content workers, content moderators who are working at TikTok. They wanted better conditions. They wanted better pay. And they wanted a way to fight back against the decreasing content moderation rules on the platform that were allowing millions of pieces of dangerous content to spread across the world. TikTok said that they wanted to negotiate with us, but just before negotiations, TikTok laid off all of its content moderators. TikTok said that they laid them off because of AI, because the AI could do their roles. And while TikTok does use AI in its content moderation to support its workers, the workers knew that the AI could not perform their roles. And we at United Tech and Allied Workers knew that TikTok was offshoring those jobs to countries with fewer worker rights and with far less pay. And that is why unions need stronger rights and more protections. And that is why I'm so happy to be here supporting the Green Workers' Charter. The Workers' Rights Act, which was brought in by people like the trade unions and also brilliant MPs like Jeremy Corbyn, has been watered down and does not go far enough. The Green Party will be fighting for workers' rights, and I am happy to stand beside them. So on May 7th, I want to ask you not just to vote Green, join your union, join my union. Start conversations, start organizing, and start building power, because we collectively will need to build the power to sustain and move this Green Workers' Charter forward. Solidarity, everyone. Thank you.
Okay. Hello, Green family. My name is Sarissa. I work at the University of Nottingham, and I'm a member of Unison, the Public Service Union. The UK has been my home since 2022, but something that I've always known that became really clear to me in my first week here is that having a home is not a right. It's a constellation of privatized services you subscribe to with most of the money that you make. This does not make Britain unique. Housing isn't free anywhere in the world. And unless you're a billionaire, you can't live or work anywhere that you want. Personally, I've paid thousands to the Home Office for the privilege of working my job. And besides money, I also pay in time, spending weeks and months on applications for visas, explaining my name, my history, and intimate details of my healthcare to a rotating cast of strangers, landlords, managers, doctors, border agents. My visa means I can't work two jobs, but this is the second shift that comes with being a trans migrant, which is the work of justifying your own existence. So you might think that this is a struggle that's unique to workers like myself, but is it? How many of you have had to perform your suffering for a sick day, prove you're sad enough to take bereavement leave, felt that knot when an 8 p.m. email comes in and you're too scared to ignore it? It's all of us. You might be white passing, cis, able-bodied. You might have a generally good deal, permanent contract, flexi hours, healthcare cover, working from home. You might think you're safe. But a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. If employers can get away with giving you less, they will. When restructuring season comes, no one is truly safe. Or they'll keep you, but replace your team with cheaper agency workers, and now all of a sudden, you're working twice as fast, twice as hard, just to meet expectations. That health insurance they gave you isn't to keep you healthy, it's to keep you working on-call hours, through lunch, and through life's milestones. And all this is downstream, in my opinion, from the same system, whether it's the Home Office auditing my gender or algorithms optimizing your breaks. It's a system that puts profit over people and compliance over compassion. We are the working class. We're no strangers to hard work. In fact, I myself was at work when I saw Keir Starmer declaring Labour the party of work. Nice of them to join us, I thought, whilst we've been subsidising corporate wage bills, paying for MPs' drinks. With all that's happening, I think, in the world as well, it's easy to feel isolated. But when no one stood with me, my trade union did. While other parties talk of a pro-work Britain, that is a country that sees us as either human resources to manage or scroungers to punish, the Green Party built a workers' charter. And for that reason, I'm proud to stand here as a trade unionist as well as a Green member. The charter starts with three words: workers deserve better. That a Britain that works must also get to live, and must also get to rest. So I want the strong rights in this charter. I want the right to switch off, not just because I'm tired, but because me and my trans siblings need the energy to fight for our lives outside of work. I want work. So I want workers' rights with teeth, teeth that's sharp enough to bite down on two-tier contracts and strong enough to protect single parents on zero-hour contracts from being managed out, like my mom. AI justice as well, because the algorithm that's flagging my name change as suspicious is the same one that can be used to fire a warehouse picker for being sick too often. To these and more, the charter says, no, the gains by big tech must be shared with us, not used against us. Dear fellow Greens, living under two hostile environments at once, one that's against migrants and the other against trans people, has taught me that my rights only truly exist if my colleagues and I and my community and I have the power to enforce them. You can write £15 minimum wage on paper, but if a care worker on a visa is too scared to complain, that right doesn't truly exist for them. You can promise myself allyship and my community as well, but if I don't have my union rep with me in the room, who's got my back when the prejudice starts? Who's got yours if you get put on a PIP? That's why this charter comes as a package. Higher pay funds our dignity. Stronger rights protect our lives beyond the clock. And collective power means we don't have to beg our abusers for mercy, because power is a language that makes us workers universally understood. We are the working class. We are a realistic bunch of people. We know the meaning of hard work. But we're also more than just human resources. We're complex, tired, beautiful, and unbreakable. Thanks for still listening. I'll finish up with just this part. Coming to the UK was my first time ever on a plane. When I got here, I found a country that seemingly wanted me just for my labor and not my life, my work and not my life. But a green said to me, both are important, that my life off shift matters just as much as my time on shift, that the identities I hold are not administrative difficulties, but a living and breathing aspect of the tapestry we call the working class. And again, that's all of us. We are the working class. Ours is the struggle of a long and storied people, and some of these stories are recorded right here in this museum. And we honor these stories, not by feeling sorry for those who came before, but by fighting for each other and all those who will come after. So I say, let's build a Britain where no one has to justify their existence, a Britain where we guarantee each other's rights, where we all get to be ourselves, not just the lucky few, and certainly not just the CEOs on soul-searching trips in Asia, because we do the work and we've earned the rest. So that's it. Thank you. Let's go out there and win on May 7th and keep winning until all of us have won.
Friends, comrades, my name is Jasser Alawalia. I'm here today as a Green Party member, but I'm also proud to serve on the executive of Equity, a non-affiliated trade union. I have to say that legally. But what a joy it is to be back here in Manchester. Just over 2 months ago, I felt compelled to get on a train from London to be here to make history with you. I walked the streets of Gorton and Denton, knocked on doors, posted leaflets, and much to the horror and disgust of Reform, main uncle vi aunties de naal main Punjabi vich main gal kita si. I even spoke to uncles and aunties in Punjabi. I stood on doorsteps with Hannah Spencer and watched her listen. We now watch her speak for us in Parliament because we won. And we will keep on winning. But the ballot box is only one site of struggle. We may not always have control over the injustices that come our way, but as workers in an economic system that depends on our labor, we have power. And our unions are how we wield that power. Collectively. When I was unceremoniously fired from an acting job in 2021, I was told that the company's dignity at work policy didn't apply to me. I was a precarious worker that they felt they could dispose of easily. But I knew that I could fight. Fight back, not as an individual, but as a union member, as an Equity member. With 50,000 comrades behind me, legal action was threatened, and I walked away with a financial settlement and my head held high. There is power in a union. We must now wield that power to demand AI justice. As this charter sets out, we need new employment laws to protect workers from AI harms, and a national strategy to ensure that the gains from new technology are shared with workers. That is why, at Equity's conference next weekend, I will be proposing a motion to send to the TUC, calling for our movement to lobby the government to introduce personality rights, giving performers a clear route to control and license their digital replicas. And we stand ready to fight. Last year, an indicative ballot saw 99% of actors vote to refuse digital scanning until AI protections are secured. This move has greatly strengthened our hand in ongoing industrial negotiations. We have power. I am a mixed heritage activist who strives to honour those who came before me. One such man was William Cuffy, who championed perhaps the most famous charter of all, the People's Charter, a movement inspired by the people of Manchester who stood up for justice and faced a cavalry charge at the Peterloo Massacre. Another is abolitionist Frederick Douglass, who notably observed that power concedes nothing without a demand. We must demand our rights, strong rights, and our unions must be empowered to fight for them. The days of celebrating worker resilience are over. Now is the time for resistance. And so I'd like to end with my union's motto. To all artists, good work. To all workers, good art. And to all people, equity. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Rain, Sarissa, Jassa, and Hannah. Thank you, guys. Woo! Okay, so our final section of the charter is around collective power. Now, the next guest speaker, when I think collective, I think to the southwest of England in Bristol, where I think of a collective of Green Party councillors. And who are they working with? They're working with the Bristol Central MP. So I'm going to welcome to the stage Carla Denyer.
I have to have a box. Thank you, Paul. And thank you to everyone in the Green Party Trade Union Group who has made this amazing evening possible, and to the amazing, inspiring speakers who went before me. To be working together across different sectors to launch this charter, I mean, just that collaboration itself is a powerful symbol of collective action, which is how we win better rights for everyone, whether it's in hospitality, in public services like teaching or collecting the bins, or in the arts or in any other sector. Better rights for everyone depends on us all standing together for real change, not just promises. And whilst the government's Employment Rights Act is progress, it's not enough. Collective power is still being undermined by nearly 50 years of anti-union and anti-strike laws. And even after the new Employment Rights Act, workers' rights in the UK are still below average for similar countries. So we must take every opportunity to fight for our collective power to be restored, to be strengthened, and to use it for the common good. Today, then, on collective power, we are demanding three major changes. First, that the changes in the new Act are implemented fast and without any compromises. Second, that the King's Speech, coming up soon now on the 13th of May, includes proposals for new legislation so that unfair dismissal rights are protected from day one. So there's a full ban on fire and rehire and zero-hours contracts, and so there's no compromises when it comes to our rights. I'm already pressing the government to do more for workers. I'm asking Ed Miliband to use his upcoming energy independence bill to grant statutory rights to union future-proofing jobs reps, rights that are backed by cross-party MPs as well as by climate groups. This would build on the work of trade union green reps, and it would be a legal requirement for employers to give workers a seat at the table as they plan how workplaces address the climate, nature, and cost of living crises, ensuring a just transition that creates good quality green jobs, unionised good quality green jobs. And we want to see more new legislation to secure strong collective bargaining and a strong right to strike. That doesn't just make sense on the grounds of fairness and equality. It's also good for our economy. Despite what we might be told, regulations that protect workers have largely positive impacts. You probably didn't need me to tell you that. But importantly, way beyond individual workers. Strong workers' rights result in a much greater proportion of income going to wages and salaries rather than shareholder dividends and private profits, of course. But that, in turn, leads to greater productivity, innovation, and employment levels, benefiting our local economies, our local communities, and our long-term resilience. And in the left behind parts of the country, there's strong evidence that extending trade union collective bargaining, especially sectoral bargaining, delivers better work, which in turn is good for society, for our economy, and for our wider well-being out of work as well. So no matter what you measure, the kinds of demands set out in this charter are both bold politics and common sense politics. So our third demand on collective power is ending the way that existing laws constrict and undermine our collective struggles. Scrap all anti-union and anti-strike laws introduced since 1979. Absolutely. And replace them with strong legal rights to strike, picket, and protest, including solidarity action and action for political and social causes. Because solidarity is such a critical part of our collective power. One of my priorities in Parliament is campaigning for an energy jobs guarantee. I want the £2.7 billion a year that's handed out by the Treasury to declining polluting fossil fuel companies to be diverted instead towards creating new future-facing jobs and a jobs guarantee for everyone currently working in high carbon sectors like oil and gas. And that would ensure that they can find equivalent alternative employment or funded retraining. Greens stood with the miners when they were under attack, and we stand too with oil and gas workers, with workers everywhere, in Parliament, in councils, in assemblies, in communities, in workplaces, and, of course, on the picket line. Today, on May Day, we mark the huge achievements of the labour movement in winning workers' rights. We remember the struggles to secure those hard-won rights in the first place, and we look to the struggles ahead of us. We look to a greener future, a fairer and more equal one, to a future where workers' rights are fully protected across every sector for every worker. Winning that future, that needs us all to act collectively, to demand collective power. So today, we renew our commitment to doing that. And now, I want to welcome to the stage two people who are doing just that work every day. Shona Jemfrey, who's a children's services worker and Unison member, and Emma Runswick, who's a doctor and BMA member. Please put your hands together for Shona and Emma.
I'm a bit of a giraffe, so I definitely do not need the box. Hi, my name's Shona. I've been a Unison member for about 6 years, and like many people here, I used to be in Labour. And I did love it, I'm sorry, I did, because I met so many people who were passionate about social justice, and I learned so much about the trade union movement and workers' rights and this wee fellow called Karl Marx, you may have heard of him. And around this, but then I also love being a trade unionist, and I love that more than I love party politics, which means that when Keir Starmer started discouraging his MPs from going to picket lines, I was like, something's not right here. Something's not adding up. And around the same time, I remember I saw Carla Denyer actually speaking at a rally. I don't know if you know this, Carla. This is one reason I joined the Greens. You do? Cool. It's because of you. But speaking at a rally in support of the junior doctors. And I was like, okay, here is a party where advocating for workers' rights isn't just allowed, it's actually encouraged. Which brings me to my own experience. So I'm a social worker, and my employer, Bath and North East Somerset Council, has been trying to sneak through a drastic and senseless restructure. I'm sure some of you have been through similar things. But we in the union, in Unison, we're not having it. So They hit staff with news of these changes out of the blue. People were getting letters telling them that their jobs had been deleted, that there would be redundancies, that they would have to fight each other for the spots that were left. It was completely unnecessary. It was completely chaotic, not just for us as social care staff, but for the hundreds of vulnerable children that we work with. And people were really, really upset, but they were also really, really angry. And that happened on a Monday evening. And on Wednesday lunchtime, we had an emergency union meeting. And over 100 people squeezed into this room, standing against the walls because we'd run out of chairs. And we knew that no matter how much senior management claimed that there was nothing they could do, these changes had to happen, they were inevitable, we knew that they weren't set in stone. If I've learned anything in a decade of political activism, it is that nothing is inevitable. So we organised, we set up WhatsApp groups. We all love a WhatsApp group in politics. We spoke to the press. We recruited 20 new reps in a fortnight. We liaised with our local green councillors. They don't run the council yet, we'll see. But they are damn good already in opposition, and they were able to use their platform to fight our corner in council meetings. As council employees, we weren't allowed to speak in council meetings, but our families and friends and retired members who live there, well, they definitely could. And when the local foster carers we work with found out what was happening, they could as well, and they made their voices very clear. And over 100 of us turned out to protest outside a council meeting with flags and placards and megaphones and pots and pans to drum and shout and scream and chant. And we stood right under the windows of the room where the council meeting was happening. And we were so loud that even with the windows shut, and even though they had microphones, they still had to yell to hear each other. We made that much noise, and the atmosphere was electric. And the very next morning, the employer suddenly made some concessions. Imagine that. They agreed to take more time over the changes. They agreed to consult the unions. And then one of the senior managers strangely resigned. So, you know, nothing. Complete coincidence, I'm sure. So the battle is far from over. They are still proposing redundancies, but we are also not done with them. We have held an indicative ballot, which for most of you probably know what that is, but for anyone who doesn't, that's where you take a temperature check of your members. We got a 94% turnout on that ballot, and 91 voted yes to possible strike action. So we are now holding our formal ballot for strike action. And if we do end up on the picket line, if you're in the Southwest, please do swing by to say hi and show your support. The employer keeps trying to claim that these drastic changes are inevitable. But we can see that no other local authority is doing what we're doing. So we know that that's simply not true. Nothing is inevitable. And yet, of course, I'm scared. We all are. But I'm also really excited by what we've achieved and what is possible. And if the last few years have taught me anything, is that nothing is inevitable and anything is possible. I'm now also an elected Green councillor in Bristol. We have taken over the council. And that's something that was unthinkable a decade ago. So I want you to remember this, that people are ready for change and the political landscape is moving faster than it ever has. Nothing is inevitable and everything is possible. As someone once said to me, the only thing that is inevitable is the law of gravity, and politics is not bound by that. Everything is possible. Be part of a union. Be part of the Green Party. Be part of the possible. Thank you very much.
Hi, thank you. My name is Emma Runswick. I'm a mental health doctor here in Greater Manchester, and I'm a BMA NEC member. The BMA is a non-partisan trade union and professional association of 200,000 doctors currently fighting and winning in disputes all across the UK. And for us, the Employment Rights Act brings positives and long overdue reforms to trade union regulation, but I cannot gush about it. The Employment Rights Act is frankly not good enough to protect and promote workers' rights. It doesn't even go as far as the Labour Party manifesto did, and some elements have been deliberately delayed to reduce our impact on their government and our ability to fight their bad decision-making. The shift to online balloting and removal of thresholds has been held back until at least August, over 2 years since their election, possibly later. We as trade unionists must demand the thresholds are abolished immediately, definitely no later than August. in my brief time, I want to mention just a couple of the changes amongst many beyond the existing Employment Rights Act that we need to see and how they would impact doctors and health workers. First, the law against secondary action or solidarity action needs to be repealed. Secondary action is taken by workers in support of a dispute involving another group of workers. In the NHS, which is increasingly outsourced, it can be necessary for workers from different employers, often on the same site, to collaborate in order to secure safe working conditions. Currently, because of the ban on solidarity action, each group has to construct a different dispute against each employer. This is time-consuming and, frankly, ridiculous, especially when the policies and actions of one employer, for example, of workers in the laboratory, affects all of us across a hospital system. In the private sector, we have agencies employing doctors from abroad, often from West Africa, who create systems of multiple jeopardy to prevent doctors from speaking up. If a doctor like my colleague Fia becomes a troublemaker to them by complaining as she did about a clinical problem, or her colleagues did about the quality of the housing they were provided, or about racism at work, these agencies control and can threaten everything. They don't just pay their wages, they are the doctor's landlord, they hold their professional registration, they hold their visa status. Challenge through employment tribunal on an individual basis is slow, far slower than a Home Office deportation threat. More settled and empowered workers like me should be able to take action to protect those who are most exploited and at risk of abuse, but currently that is prohibited by laws that stop secondary action. In the NHS, we have some groups of workers who never want to take action due to moral and professional obligations to patients. For example, my colleagues who work with patients with fast progressing cancers. Those who do non-emergency work in and indeed beyond the health service should be able to take action to ensure good conditions for those who cannot stop working. In the 1980s, this happened. Significant strike action by all sorts of workers supported nurses' pay disputes. But secondary action is banned because it works, right? Because it makes us stronger by building solidarity between us and because it would enable us to solve all of those problems I listed. Any party on the side of workers needs to repeal that ban, and I'm glad that the Green Party have committed to that today. The next key issue is the current restriction of trade disputes as only being with an employer and only on specific issues. Doctors are affected at work by lots of organisations that are not their direct employer. Resident doctors like me, most of us on three-year fixed-term contracts, get the worst of this. Recruitment bodies, not employers, conduct interviews and allocate jobs. The statutory education bodies conduct annual reviews of my competency and can end my employment. Host NHS trusts are the actual places we work. Royal colleges govern our exams, which govern our progression, with regular serious errors like giving incorrect results. None of those bodies are my employer. None can be subject to a trade dispute or a strike. Most can't be held accountable by via legal mechanisms either, and trust me, we have looked. They are just unaccountable, despite having complete control over our lives. And it is set that way deliberately. Thousands of doctors that are currently being let go at the end of fixed-term contracts because of NHS funding cuts have hardly any recourse. The legislation holds us back. And that is before we get to action, which would currently be unlawful, on the wider politics issues that doctors care so deeply about. Palantir's involvement in the NHS, public health issues, climate. We are facing so many threats to our health in this country. The burden of avoidable disease is killing us and overrunning the NHS. Doctors and health workers want a healthy population, and so do all of us. Yet we can only hold disputes on a tiny list of workplace issues. The law has always sought to limit our ability to fight for our interests against bosses. It is an uneven playing field. Even under the new law, the Employment Rights Act, strike mandates will require annual ballots. But no company ever has to seek shareholder permission to underpay workers. No government has to seek referendum permission to make cuts. The commitment to 3R unions is a powerful commitment to even up the odds, to free us to organise ourselves to win better lives at work and in the wider world. All trade unionists must push for that. I'm delighted that the Green Party is pushing for that as well. Solidarity and happy May Day.
Thank you so much, Shona, Emma and Carla there. So we move on now to our final three speakers this evening, and I'm very excited because I get to introduce them. And really, these next three speakers, they embody the values of the Charter. So I'm sure you've all heard about the Birmingham bin strike. So we're going to invite up to the stage Matt Reed.
Thank you. Thank you. My name's Matt Reed. I'm the Unite convener for the Birmingham bin dispute. Currently in our 16th month of industrial action. That's 479 days for everyone else. And it's been quite a long go. 3 years ago, Birmingham City Council declared itself effectively bankrupt because of equal pay liability it thought would equate to £750 million. Failed IT system, which equated to another £150 million. It was supposed to be £20 million. And a budget black hole of £300 million. Complete financial mismanagement by their officers. Their first step was to sack all of their financial officers, raise the pay of women that were discriminated against, and put checks and balances in place to make sure that none of their staff lost any money and that the people of Birmingham wouldn't have to pay a penny for it. No, that didn't happen. No. What actually happened was that Birmingham bin workers were told that they would be fired and rehired and would lose up to £8,000 a year from their annual salary. This was a start of something truly powerful in Birmingham for our movement. Not just a dispute, but a demonstration of collective strength, dignity, solidarity, and would spread like a fire through our movement in the area. For 16 long months, Birmingham bin workers have stood firm in the face of fire and rehire tactics, in the face of immense pressure, and in the face of a system that too often seems stacked against working people. They did not back down. That takes courage. That takes resolve, and that deserves recognition. What we've seen is not just a strike. It's been an incredible outpouring of solidarity and support from trade unionists, activists across the country, to local communities standing shoulder to shoulder. People have come together to say, enough is enough. Workers should not be treated as disposable. Their livelihoods are not bargaining chips. And yet, while we've shown strength and unity, Birmingham City Council has chosen to waste £35 million in an attempt to break our strike. £35 million of public money spent not on improving services, not on supporting communities, but undermining its own workforce, and that decision speaks volumes. For 16 months, there has been no recycling in Birmingham. The incinerator and the landfill has doubled the amount of waste. Unite and our General Secretary Sharon Graham have been amazing throughout this dispute. Their support has been unwavering, and it has been the General Secretary herself that has worked tirelessly with the help of Unite organisers to not only give us the resources and tools to resist our employer, but to actually push back and fight against the anti-union tactics and legislation that have been used against us in Birmingham. We've discovered over the last 16 months of strike action that solidarity is not just a slogan. It's real. I've seen it. People all over the country have come to give their time and money and support, and not just with words, but with real action. That has had a massive impact on our dispute. And the morale of picket lines has raised just because of it. It has been a contributing factor to our continued determination to continue fighting until we have won not just this, but not just for us, but for our whole movement. Our last industrial action ballot after 14 months on strike was for 100% strike action, 100% vote, and that was the first, strongest it's been. And that is down to people from all around the country coming to help us, coming to like show us. When we had injunctions put in against us, we thought we were beaten. And then we realised that the injunction was only against Birmingham City Council workers and Unite officials. So people who didn't work for Birmingham City Council, who weren't Unite officials, came from all around the country and blocked wagons for us, and it was absolutely fantastic. Let this be a lesson now that solidarity works and unity matters. And when working people refuse to be pushed aside, they can and do make change happen. And now, after months of hardship and resilience, we find ourselves cautiously optimistic Optimistic that the combined strength and solidarity we've shown has shifted the balance. Optimistic that a deal can now be reached, one that respects workers, protects livelihoods and restores families. We hope that this is the case and it's not just electioneering, and the Labour Party have signed up to a deal that they say they can't do because of Purdah until after the election. But I think other parties in Birmingham have called their bluff, if it is a bluff, and they've agreed that yes, a negotiated settlement should be done, and they've agreed to do that, including Julian Pritchard of the Greens in Birmingham, has said that a negotiated settlement should be done with United Bin Workers. And finally, a message to the bin workers of Birmingham. I'm proud to be one of you, and your fight has not gone unnoticed. Your strength and determination has made a difference, and your stand will inspire others for years to come. Solidarity and thank you.
Nice one, Matt. Well done. Well done. So next up, we're in Manchester, so we need the president of the Manchester Trades Council, Chris Neville.
Hello, comrades. My name's Chris Neville. I'm the president of Manchester Trades Council, which is the local umbrella body that brings together Manchester's TUC-affiliated union branches in the city, and I'm also a member of Unite. Proud to be speaking on behalf of Manchester Trades Council on May Day, a day rooted in international working class struggle, solidarity, and the idea that working people deserve dignity, security, and a genuine say over their lives. From our perspective as trade unionists, the single most important thing we need from any political party is quite straightforward: the abolition of anti-trade union legislation. For decades now, working people in this country have been forced to operate with one hand behind their backs. Restrictive laws have limited our ability to organise, to take industrial action, and to defend ourselves effectively in the workplace. No other democratic right is so heavily constrained. No other group of people is expected to fight for basic fairness under such tight legal restrictions. If we are serious about improving pay, conditions and security at work, then we must be serious about removing those barriers. Trade unions do not need to be managed or controlled. We need to be unshackled. Give us the freedom to organise, and workers will do what workers have always done, stand together and win improvements collectively. When we think of political parties and trade unions, it's usually the Labour Party that comes to mind. The Labour Party was founded by trade unions, and many of the major trade unions in this country are still affiliated to it. But I'm not sure that so many of those links have looked as fragile as they do today. In recent years, this tradition has been diluted. Instead of strengthening collective rights, the right to organise, to bargain collectively, to strike, the focus has too often shifted towards individual rights at work. And those rights, they do matter, but they're not a substitute for collective power. And it's been deeply disappointing to see proposals on employment rights watered down at a time when bold action is needed. Working people are facing rising living costs, insecure work and stagnant wages. Under capitalism, there is an eternal battle between the working class and the ruling class, and every Labour government has caved under pressure from the latter. And so I was surprised and delighted when an email from one of your trade union liaison officers, Kate, appeared in the Manchester Trades Council inbox, inviting us to speak at tonight's event. The Green Party has not historically been known in the movement for its connection to the trade unions, but it's good to see a push for that to change. The Green Party's 2024 manifesto, and indeed the document that we're talking about tonight, did promise the repeal of anti-union legislation, and you must take this opportunity to learn from Labour's historic and deeply unpopular mistakes. In times of crisis, the Labour Party has always caved under pressure and chosen to make workers rather than the bosses pay. My message to Hannah, Carla and Zach is this. If the Green Party is to become the party of workers and their unions, when push comes to shove, you must choose to side with the workers over their bosses. You must be firm in your reasoning, and that must be that we, the workers, are the majority in this country, and without us, nothing happens. If we are to build a fairer economy and a more democratic society. Trade unions must be at the centre of that effort, not as an afterthought, not as a stakeholder amongst many to be consulted on one side of the argument, but as a driving force for change. The Green Party has an opportunity to stand clearly and unapologetically for the repeal of anti-trade union laws, for strong collective rights, and for a model of work that puts people before profit. May Day reminds us that progress is never handed down from above. It's won through struggle, through organisation and solidarity. And as many of you will know, we will be hosting our own May Day celebration this Sunday to remember 100 years of the general strike. At 11 a.m, we'll march from Halltown Metrolink station into Manchester, into the Mechanics Institute, which is an amazing building full of trade union history. There'll be music and politics, and the bar will be open. And I'd like to use this as an opportunity to invite all of you to come and join us on the day. You will be very welcome to do so. And finally, my message to everyone in this room is to urge you to join a trade union, to become active in it, to become a workplace rep, to sign your colleagues up at work, and to help us as a movement rebuild the strength that we used to have in this country. Thank you once again to Kate and the Green Party for inviting us to speak tonight. And most importantly, let's keep fighting together for the rights, dignity, and the prosperity that working people deserve. Solidarity, and thank you.
Nice one, Chris. Cool. So none of this could have happened tonight without the Green Party Trade Union Group. So I want to invite to the stage now the chair of the Green Party Trade Union Group, Roxanne Mashari.
Thanks, Paul. It is my pride to stand at this rally today as your elected chair of the Green Party Trade Union Group. Thank you to all our fantastic speakers and solidarity in all of your struggles. It's been so inspiring to hear your work today. Thank you for voting for me, those of you who did vote for me, alongside our fantastic committee who have helped to pull this event together today. A big thank you to the committee and everyone who's helped pull the event today, including the staff at the People's History Museum. If we could have a round of applause for the staff and the committee who have helped pull this event together today. The Green Party Trade Union Group is nearly 3,000 members strong and growing. If you're not already part of the movement, please sign up at our stall or online. For 23 years, I believed Labour was the best vehicle and hope for change, our best chance of working class representation. But we have to be honest. The current government are not up to meeting this moment. They don't have the vision, the courage, or even the right analysis of the problem to meet the scale of what working class people are facing. And we cannot afford to pretend otherwise. Because this is serious and this is urgent. With the general election just 3 years away, we're staring down the barrel of a Reform UK government that would turn back the clock. A politics that targets LGBTQ plus people, migrants, people of colour, disabled people, anyone considered other, while claiming to represent the interests of workers. Division, decline, and working class communities paying the price. So we need to focus and we need to organise like we've never organised before. We cannot allow the future of this country to be built by the Reform UK billionaires, opportunists and grifters. The People's History Museum, where we are today, tells the story of how workers built political power from the ground up. But it also reminds us that every generation has to organise again. That the fight doesn't end, it gets handed on. From Manchester's industrial past to the fabric and steel towns in the Midlands, there was pride, there was identity, and there was solidarity. And when that was stripped away, when industries were hollowed out, when communities were left behind, something else moved in to fill that gap. This is what the far right have fed on. But we know, unlike Labour, that you don't beat the far right by echoing their language and policies. We beat the far right by giving people a real alternative to believe in. Reindustrialization. Reindustrialization, a green industrial revolution built on clean energy, green manufacturing and secure unionised jobs. A just transition that guarantees jobs for those in oil, gas and heavy industry. We know in the green trade union movement that a green industrial revolution is not a luxury. It is the only serious economic plan on the table. Because it is through rebuilding industry that we rebuild pride, we rebuild community and we rebuild solidarity. And that's how we take on the far right, not just by arguing with them, but by removing the conditions that they thrive in. They offer blame, we offer economic renewal. They divide, we organise. And we have to be just as clear about the climate and ecological crisis, because it is working class communities who feel the hurt first and worst. Rising prices from extreme weather, floods, heat waves, insecurity. And globally, it is the poorest who are already paying the price. We know in the green trade union movement that the climate crisis is a class issue. We are the party that refuses to look away from the reality of climate change. We tell the truth about it and we act on it. The Green Party Trade Union Group has an ambitious programme of work over the coming months that we really hope you will be involved with. We want trade union liaison officers in every local party. We want to mobilise to be present on picket lines, not occasionally, but consistently. We will be supporting workplace campaigns, standing side by side with working class communities in struggle. We want to take your knowledge, your experience and your insights from the workplace to shape party policy on workers' rights and industrial strategy. Because you know what's happening in your industries and workplaces, and your expertise will help build the policy that we can deliver from day one. We've got a programme of events planned, education and organising, and we want your ideas, your input and your leadership. And we are launching an equality strategy because we know the fight for workers' rights is inseparable from the fight against racism, sexism, ableism and all forms of exclusion and bias hardwired into too many of our workplaces. We know that solidarity is not just a slogan, it's a strategy. It's how we win. So let's be clear about what we do now. We organise, we show up, we stand shoulder to shoulder with workers from the Birmingham bin strikers to the Manchester Kimpton clock tower staff. Because when we organise, we are united and there is nothing inevitable about decline and nothing unstoppable about division. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Roxanne. And folks, can we have another massive round of applause for all our speakers this evening? And a big cheer. Now, I'll tell you what, folks, doing this comparing and jumping up and down the stage is quite frankly, absolutely knackering. But there is one guest speaker tonight who really is like a Duracell bunny. He's been up and down the country, he's absolutely everywhere, and I want to invite him to wrap us up this evening. So please welcome back to the stage, Zach Polansky.
I'm never sure how to feel about Duracell Bunny, but I'll take it. It's interesting, though, because I won't lie, it has been shattering. Yesterday I was in Hastings, I'm in Cardiff tomorrow early in the morning, and I know many people have just spoken, are zipping around the country too. But actually, how energising has tonight been to hear people on the stage talking about their struggle, their resistance, the times they've not won, and the times they've won. And I suppose a couple of things, and I'll wrap up quickly because I'm aware we've been here for a while, but I really enjoyed when Chris from the Trades Council threw down the gauntlet in some way and said, Zach, Hannah, Carla, you must make sure you're on the side of the workers at all times. And I take that. But actually, we also know that's not just for the leadership or our MPs. That's our entire movement. That's every single person in this room. And actually, everyone who's not in this room right now, let's always think about who doesn't yet know about a political movement or about a trade union? Who are the people, maybe they're unemployed? We've been talking about workers a lot tonight, as we should, it's May Day. But what about people who are disabled, who have long-term health conditions, or people who have lost their jobs because of unfortunate circumstances? Let's make sure we're thinking about everyone in this movement. Always thinking about how do we bring them to meetings, whether it's a Green Party meeting, a community meeting, a trade union meeting. I just want to do one more huge thank you to everyone who's spoken tonight. Thank you to our interpreters. Down here we've got Alex on tech. Alexander. And a huge thank you to everyone at the People's History Museum for putting on the event tonight. You'd probably expect me to mention this, but we have a huge set of elections in 6 days' time. And we know there is a toxic combination right now of high bills and low wages. And signing this charter is one of the ways that we can take those steps to making hope normal again. So I'd really encourage you to sign the charter. I should say, I was backstage and I said to Paul, are there any other call to actions in the evening? And then someone from the People's History Museum said, if you could ask people to donate to us, that would be really appreciated. So the People's History Museum are also asking for your donations. Now, I mentioned the elections. Of course, I'm going to say vote green on Thursday. But we also know our struggles right now are even bigger than that. They don't stop with the elections on Thursday. They continue with a grassroots movement of people looking after each other, a politics of care, compassion, that is rooted in the workplace, where people make sure they look out for each other. We keep taking that collective responsibility so we can all make sure that we have higher pay, stronger rights, and stronger union collective action. And that's exactly how we're going to change the country. Thank you very much. Thank you. And one more round of applause for Paul and Kate.
Thank you so much, Zach. And that's it, folks. So when you exit today, please do grab a Green Party Workers' Charter. We've printed off a load. I know that doesn't sound very green, but we should all have a copy. So do help yourself as you leave. And those of you speakers-wise, we're going to take a photo at the front of the stage.